Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Hey, you've reached Ricky Vigil, but I didn't answer the phone. Leave a message and I'll probably call you back.
Testing the recorder. Hey, recorder. How are you? I bet you're awesome.
I'm JP, and welcome to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, arts, action sports, and subculture. On today's episode, my last episode with the show, I'll be handing over the reins to Dan Nalen, a very competent and delightful host, and we'll be featuring Monica Campbell, a beer chat with our new beer critic, and POS. Monica Campbell is a professional dancer based out of Utah who has taught in Spain, Argentina, and the U.S. Campbell danced for the Diavolo Dance Theater in Los Angeles for 8 years before moving to Utah to complete her master's in modern dance at the U of U. Campbell still choreographs and performs locally and is currently an assistant professor in the dance department at UVU. Campbell recently won top honors at the Rocky Mountain Choreography Festival, and Slug senior writer Mariah Mellis sat down with Campbell to talk about her latest production.
A little bit about the show. It's going to take place on November 3rd. Let's just talk about what we can expect to see and maybe what got you to this position.
My company, Monica Campbell and Dancers, the whole first half of the show, I'm bringing back pieces of the last few years that I've really loved. So I did bring in one guest choreographer. She set a piece on myself and Jill Voorhees Edwards, a former Ryrie Woodbury dancer. So we have her choreography for one piece, and then the rest of the first half is just pieces I've brought back. So there's a very upbeat duet. There's a trio that recently was shown in the American College Dance Festival Gala. And then a solo that I've set on an RDT veteran, actually, Angie Banchero. So basically, the first half is me doing work that I love with a group of friends, revamping some old work. The whole second half of the show will be my premiere. It's a new piece entitled The Spring.
Nice. So I want to go back to that duet that you have, because I'm really excited about it. I haven't had a chance to see it before. It was kind of exploring the proximity of a couple and its breathing room. It made me think about how close you actually, the close talker. What's your personal space? So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, Breathing Room, like I said, it's a duet, and we actually have a set piece, a structure built into the space that's a very small box. And so the choreography starts in this very, very small space, and as it gets more frantic and more frantic, the space expands and expands, and the set moves and opens up. It really reminds me of a couple redecorating a bathroom or doing housework repair, those, you know, the tension builds, you fight, you throw each other around a little bit, and then once you finally finish the project, there's a bit of an exhalation.
Nice.
So that's definitely more of an upbeat part of the show.
Well, and you do explore some intense issues in your dancing. You've got a piece you're bringing back called The Final Hours, and tell us a little bit about that piece.
The Final Hours was originally a 45-minute piece that explored the anti-Soviet uprising in Budapest in 1956.
So, very intense.
Yeah, so we're looking at ideas of revolution, rebellion, and who stands beside you when you're in those sort of events.
Nice. And then we move on to your new piece, The Spring. And what will you be exploring during that piece?
In The Spring, there's actually definitely, you can see a through line between The Final Hours and The Spring. It is inspired by the events of the Arab Spring, which began in January 2010. And just to, you know, really think that all of those uprisings started with one person, one fruit vendor, who lit himself on fire, and then country after country after country kind of jumped on board with this idea of revolution. So really the idea of how one individual can instigate huge, huge change. So The Spring really explores, again, that idea of revolution and the human spirit willing to stand up against everything.
Nice. And I really love that you're going to be showcasing those themes in your work and in your dances. I feel like it's, you know, a great outlet to show passion and, you know, a lens to explore the passion and the spirit that is involved in an uprising through dance. So I think that's excellent. I'm sure it's going to transcend onto the audience. This Rocky Mountain Choreography Festival, you win this year. Then do people go on? Does this go on? I mean, How does that whole cycle?
Well, Raymond Van Mason, he is the artistic director of Imagine Ballet Theater. He's the one that kind of put the choreography festival together as a way to cultivate new work. And he's excited to really have it be an annual event. So I believe, I just checked on the website a few days ago, the new festival has been announced. They're accepting submissions for next year. So interested choreographers can go to imagineballet.org for more information on that. Because the fact that, you know, we're getting a show in that theater is pretty amazing. It's a beautiful historic theater. It's huge.
Yeah, you've got a lot of seats to fill, don't you? There's like 1,500 seats or something.
Yeah, it's a big theater, but just to even dance on that stage is a phenomenal opportunity. So I hope choreographers take advantage of this to bring their companies to that stage.
A lot of partners on this. We have the Imagine Ballet, then your group, which is the Monica Campbell and Dancers, and you normally perform over at Sugar Space, is that correct?
I've done a lot with Sugar Space. I think it's a really great arts organization that, again, cultivates a lot of new work. Brittany Reese over there is phenomenal. Most of my work has been in the university setting, actually. I'm assistant professor at Utah Valley University. I've been in their dance program. This is my fourth year. And then I also went to graduate school at the University of Utah. So I've been able to kind of work with a lot of dancers in those two schools as they graduate and move on. And so this company now is really a mix of all those people I've worked with over the past several years. So usually we do perform locally. So this is kind of our jaunt to Ogden.
Well, and I think that's wonderful that you get to kind of, through all of your travels, and you've been here since 2007, so you probably started to like gather your community around you, and it's fun that you get to still be there and be performing and working with that community. Yeah. Where were you before you were here in Salt Lake?
I actually did grow up here. I graduated with the BFA in Modern Dance in 1999, and then I danced for about 7.5 years in Los Angeles with Diablo Dance Theater. There I was a performer, and I also was the rehearsal director and eventually the associate artistic director. So running companies is something I got just very familiar with, and I really enjoy it.
Nice. And then you had to come back home and do it here.
Yes. Came back to grad school and on to the next adventure.
Nice. So speaking of next adventures, it looks like you've got some master classes. So tell me what is all entailed in these master classes and where we can participate in them.
So I will be teaching a couple of master classes just to kind of share the repertory. So if dancers want to actually dance some of the movement that's going to be on stage and kind of connect with it on a physical level, I'll be teaching through the Ryrie Woodbury master class series and also through the CODA Dance Company, which is the in-house resident company of Sugar Space.
Okay, and those are what days and when?
The CODA class at Sugar Space. Yeah, that's part of the CODA Masterclass Series. CODA is the resident company at Sugar Space Performing Arts Center. That's in Sugar House. The class is from 5:30 to 7 p.m. October 23rd. That's a Tuesday night.
Nice. So if you want to know more about those, how would you find out about them? I mean, like, if you wanted to sign up for them, do you just show up, or maybe they go stalk you on Facebook?
Well, those classes are, again, totally open to the public, and those are actually going to be housed under the Ryrie Woodbury Masterclass.
Oh, and the CODA.
And the CODA Masterclass.
Okay. So what about...
But anyone is welcome to come.
Oh, that's fabulous.
But it is an advanced class.
Yeah. You should know how to dance before you show up. That's good to know. Like I said, offer the amateur class for those of us, but then, you know, make sure it's blocked out and the public can't see, and you have to promise not to tell anyone what you saw in that room. If you want to attend, you want to buy tickets, you know, can we find you on Facebook, or and how do we buy tickets and all that good stuff for the November 3rd event?
Well, I have made just my own events page. It's Monica Campbell and Dancers on Facebook, and you can see, you know, photographs, rehearsal footage. I've done some interviews with the dancers just about the process, just to kind of introduce the dancers to the audience. Hopefully they fall in love with them before they even see the show. So that's on Facebook, and then imagineballet.org is the Imagine Ballet Theater website. There's definitely a link since they are the ones presenting it. Yeah. Tickets can be found at the Piri's Egyptian Theater box office and also at SmithTix, and they are on sale now.
Imagine Ballet Theater will present Monica Campbell and Dancers on November 3rd at Piri's Egyptian Theater in Ogden. Tickets are just $15 at the box office and are also available through SmithTix. For more info on the production, visit imagineballet.org. PTO is a four-piece indie rock group from Salt Lake City comprised of Nate Housley, Phil Smallwood, Greg Wilson, and Chad Hokama. The band released their debut album, Pointless, back in September of 2012. From Pointless, here's Touch and Go from PTO. That was PTO's Touch and Go from their debut full-length, Pointless. To purchase a copy of the album, check out the band's shop at ptomusic.bandcamp.com. And for more info on the group and future gigs, visit them online at facebook.com/ptomusic.
We're here with Mike Riedel from utahbeer.blogspot.com. You just gotta Google Utah Beer and Mike shows up. Resident expert of all things beer-related in Utah, correct?
It's just that simple.
Excellent. Well, obviously, we've had sort of a shift of temperature here lately. We are going from, oh, it's so damn hot, I need a beer, to it's fall, it's kind of crisp, I need a different beer.
Fall is the best time for beer.
Yeah, why is that?
It's harvest time. The fields are full, and grain is plentiful, and it's the best time to make beer. And there are a lot of great styles for the fall.
This is the time when local brewers are out frolicking in the hills, picking their own hops, coming back down to the city and making awesome new stuff.
Yeah, and that's one of the great parts about it, is you can get really creative because there's so much around, even naturally.
Right.
Two brewers have gone up into the hills to pick wild hops to make special harvest ales.
Oh, nice. So very limited edition.
Yeah. Desert Edge did one. And I believe it's gone by now. And Wasatch Brew Pub in Park City did the same thing. Theirs is called Hop Bandit because I think they're stealing the hops. But I'm not 100% sure on that, but they do call it Hop Bandit.
Borrowing. They're just borrowing.
Yeah. They're, and making great beer better. For everybody.
That's right. That's right.
And that's one of the cool things is you can get great, fresh beers picked and grown locally.
All right. What are some of your favorite just styles of beer that come around in the fall? And then we'll delve into maybe who offers those up around here.
One of my favorite styles is a lager. It's called a Märzen. Which is a German style, and most people know it as the Oktoberfest.
Okay.
Generally a sweeter, maltier beer, made specifically, you know, we're going to get into some more geeky history stuff, but it was originally made for a Bavarian royal wedding. A wedding that ended up going for weeks, and that's where Oktoberfest came from. And they needed
a lot of beer.
Yeah. All
right.
And it's a great malty beer, a little bit of vanilla notes. Some toasty notes. I find it really enjoyable, and it's one of those great transitional beers from light summer beers into the fall. It's a little more bold.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite lagers. And then you have the harvest ales, which are generally toasty, hoppy beers. Some are like brown ales.
Okay.
There's a great brown ale out right now from Red Rock called Bobcat.
All right.
Kind of fits that category. It's fuller bodied. Malty,
yeah.
Roasty.
I love the brown ales. Yes.
And it's got a lot of nice hoppy notes.
All right.
Those are two examples of some great local beers.
Okay.
Squatter should have a good Oktoberfest on right now. I think Hoppers and Epic.
And of course, Epic always has something new coming around, right?
Yeah, they're.
So now when people go out, obviously they're going to go to a brewery, and every brewery is going to claim to have an Oktoberfest. But what we're talking about is more of a legitimate Oktoberfest effort, historically speaking, for most of these places you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a fairly easy, common style. It's hard to make, you know, a Utah low alcohol version of it.
Right.
But many places do a really nice job.
Sure.
But, you know, you're true to style, you'll find the Epic and the Squatters are pretty dead on.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we have great brewers here, obviously, who are able to make these styles using the limited alcohol content that they're forced to in a lot of ways.
You really don't appreciate how good these guys are until you start tasting some of the lower alcohol beers that some of the other breweries around the country are trying to make now because it's kind of catching on.
Yeah. I saw on your blog, you were talking about, like, is it Deschutes is going to be coming into our market at some point with a lower alcohol, which is great. I love their beer, although they might not have the skills our local guys do in making the low alcohol.
Yeah, they're trying to enter the market with one. Full Sail entered one last month, and I was shocked.
Not in a good way?
How light tasting it was. And that's when I'm thinking, gosh, these guys in Utah, I mean, they've had decades to perfect great-tasting low-alcohol beers. And you try it, and you're just like, man, this is weak for even Utah standards.
This is like drinking a Bud 45 or whatever those things are. And the counterpoint, of course, is that we have our local brewers who are more and more making regular, what those of us from out of state call regular or High Point beer,
right?
And which has been a great thing. I love seeing our local beers, more and more of them appearing in our state liquor store, despite the fact they're warm and I have to get them cold by myself. But you know, tell us about some of the new ones out there.
Well, you know, just about everything Epic makes is
quality and regular strength. Mm-hmm. Or are any of them that maybe haven't gotten into that high alcohol game yet starting to now?
What has been going on, it's kind of been a renaissance in Utah as far as high alcohol beers go because the breweries were always afraid that they can never make money because it would be too tough to find an audience because it's so much easier to go to the grocery store or go to your tavern or bar to get it.
Sure.
As we all know, it's not, no matter where you live, you have to hunt to find a liquor store.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So now that it's become more prevalent, everybody's finding that it's so much in demand right now that you can't afford not to be making them. And many breweries that have solely relied on making low alcohol beers are now getting into the high alcohol game.
Oh, nice. Have most of them been pretty successful when they delve into that market, you think?
I think that you can't help but make money.
Yeah.
All the breweries that have opened up in the last few years, Epic, Shades of Pale, they've outgrown their spaces.
Right.
Epic has expanded two or three times. Shades of Pale is in a small little warehouse in Park City.
Right.
And they are completely out of room. They're completely at capacity, and they need more room. You've got Moab, who for the longest time have been contracting their bottled beers out of state.
Yeah, Montana, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've only recently been brewing everything back in Moab, and that's great because it's all locally made. Their high-alcohol beers have been blowing up.
Yeah.
And they're going in cans.
Oh, wow.
They're doing great. And then you've got Zion Canyon.
Yeah, I was going to ask about them.
In Springdale. And those guys are doing, and I should back up, they're under new management now. They got new owners, and they've got a new idea, and they got a new philosophy, and they're pushing forward four new high-alcohol brands. They wouldn't be taking a chance and spending all that money if they didn't think they could sell it.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And how do you like their beer? I don't think I've ever sampled their beer. In the past, I guess under the old management even.
Zion Canyon?
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
It needs some fine-tuning.
Sure.
They're good beers, but they could be better. Oh. And I think the direction that they are going now, I think they're going to be really phenomenal beers.
Well, and thankfully, most brewers I know are constantly working to improve, even when they're already great brewers, right? Or they're at least looking for a new way to tweak and do something new. So
that's why you always see art. Yeah, there's like new styles coming around all the time because people are just trying to bend the envelope. They've got styles like black IPAs and brown IPAs,
right.
and Belgio triple IPAs, and it's just like these guys are bored with, the styles that they made last year, and they need to, keep pushing.
We need 12 times the hops in this next one or something. It's been a hoppy revolution lately, it seems.
And surprisingly, they don't suck. You think, this beer is really going to suck because they're putting all this stuff in it. It's not even a real style, and it's like, it shouldn't work, but it does.
That's the artistry of it, right? Well, another new thing that's happening is, the people who are familiar with Trax out of Tooele, Trax has been gone for a little while now, correct? But...
Well, Trax, weird situation. They've been around about a decade. They started really strong. They kegged. They were in a lot of places. But the people in Tooele just didn't seem to want to drink craft beer.
Right.
They were more happy with their Buds and their Millers and their Coors Lights and all that stuff. And they had a bit of an identity crisis. Ended up becoming more of a sports bar than a brewery, which is a shame because it's a really nice facility out
there.
And it kind of lost its way, and for a while they weren't brewing at all, and when they were, it was just finding whoever they could find to make a couple batches. And
oh, really?
And unfortunately the equipment fell into disarray and put the thing up for sale, and a local guy,
Brad Shepherd,
thank you. Somebody's reading my blog. And he made a commitment to turn it around. He knows nothing about craft beer. Talked to people who did, and now they're making beer under the All-Star Brewing name.
Which he owns All-Star Bowling, like places like that, right?
Yeah, so it's all one big umbrella. So you may not love the name, but I think the beers are going to be pretty good because Dave Watson, the guy who's out there brewing it now, is a dedicated beer geek and brewer. I think he's got the passion to really turn that place around.
Yeah, I know Dave a little bit. I know he definitely knows his business, so he's definitely a guy I think who will push the envelope in some different directions, that's for sure. Do you know what their plans are for the facility? I mean, it sounds like they got the brewing up and going or about to, but in terms of it being a location again where people might go and have a beer, or is it going to be mostly...
Yeah, the brew house is up and running, and the remodel on the rest of the establishment is going forward, and it should be all tied in. It should be a nice big brew pub again.
Yeah, they're going to make it a destination to go and get some grub or have some beers. I mean,
I think he's definitely got the money. He's got the passion for it. And from the plans I've seen, it's going to be nice. Like I say, it's a great facility. It's large.
They've had some identity issues over the years. Like you were saying, it was a sports bar for a while. I remember they were trying to do rock shows out there for a while. They, got out of town touring bands for a while. But then you're relying on people to drive out to Tooele and have some drinks and somehow get back to Salt Lake. They don't live out there. But
I think it's a great opportunity. You've got the sports park out there.
Yeah,
and you're bringing in all kinds of international tourism out there now. you should have a quality beer establishment out there.
If you want to go out and shoot jackrabbits out in the West Desert, you have a place to stop and have a beer on the way back, or, you know.
Shit makes you thirsty.
It does, right? I mean, riding around in a truck getting dusty, you want a beer. And I think, you know, with Dave Watson, seriously, since he knows the scene and is such a vital part of the brewing scene here, I think if they want to get their beer into bars around here, maybe that gives them a little leg up on getting it into Salt Lake so people can sample it here, right?
It never hurts to have more local beer on tap.
Absolutely.
It's good for everybody.
That's absolutely right. Well, Mike, I really appreciate you coming in. Hopefully we will get you back in here to keep us up to date on what's going on with all our beer around here. There's inevitably going to be, what, Christmas ales, holiday ale, Jubilee ales, local versions?
Don't even get me started on Christmas ales.
They're going to start throwing like eggnog and cinnamon into the beer, right?
They're out there. You'd be surprised what people put in those damn beers.
That's right. Well, we'll see you next time.
Please have me back soon.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Well, you just heard the soothing dulcet tones of Dan Nalen there. I'm going to be doing events really quickly with our new host here as well. Thanks for joining us again, Dan. How are you doing?
Hey, my pleasure. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. This is kind of a fun transition for us. I'm glad that we can have this crossover here. Do you want to start off with what's going on October 23rd?
You know, October 23rd is not too shabby of a night in this town. Freelance Wales, I don't know how familiar you are, the little indie rock band from Queens, New York. They're one of those, I kind of dig them, little indie folk. They got a glockenspiel, any band with a glockenspiel I'm on board for, little banjos, some synthesizers. Pretty good. They kind of veer into that Postal Service territory, so I mean, it's kind of a love or hate thing for a lot of people when you get into that, but not a bad little band. They're playing at Kilby Court on that Tuesday, so not too bad. That also happens to be the very last night to do the downtown farmers market action, so you can get your ass some cheap produce, because those farmers need to unload some product.
That is great. So that's at Pioneer Park, correct?
That is at Pioneer Park.
And Geographer is going to be with them as well?
That's right. They're the openers for Freelance Whale, so not a bad double bill.
And Of Mice and Men is going on the next at a theater in town. Will you tell us what's going on with that event?
The classic John Steinbeck novel takes to the stage, and I know you're a theater man yourself. I'm a little curious how they're going to pull it off. It's kind of a depressing, heavy-duty book, and I think with people being so familiar with the story of these sort of old Dust Bowl farmhands moving town to town and kind of falling into a little scary situation. I don't want to give away any spoilers for anybody who didn't read their high school English copy of Of Mice and Men, but I will say, I mean, Pioneer Memorial Theater, obviously, pretty big, fancy theater, and they have a new artistic director up there this year, and I saw the first show in the Heights, and it was really impressive what they did with it, so I'm really curious how they're going to kind of capture these Okies cruising to old-time California in this, and that show, it's running for a while. You have about a week and a half more to catch it after that Wednesday, but that's a good option.
And I've seen pictures of the stage they built for it. It's really nice. They did a really good job.
Oh, nice. I would not be surprised, based on the first show they did this year. It was pretty incredible what they did on that stage, so...
And is there anything else going on that day?
Yeah, you know, Spindrift, they're pretty cool, kind of a little psych rock band. They're playing at the Garage that night. They're always a good time. And then Rhythm Combo is a great local sort of traditional, I wouldn't say rockabilly, but that real old-time rock and roll. Think of like 1956 era Elvis, that kind of thing. They're playing at the Tin Angels. You can get some cheap grinds, get some PBR rolling, and listen to some great traditional rock and roll. It's good stuff.
I'm sure that you're a big fan of Bar X, are you not?
I am a fan of Bar X.
There's something fun going on there.
David Williams, one of my favorite local musicians, a fine guitar player. He'll be tuning up, playing for the evening. Another place where you can have a ridiculously expensive cocktail, but also an Olympia in a can, so I really like that aspect of it. And that's a weird night in general, too. Like, Crystal Method's playing over at Elevate that night. They haven't been around in a little while. And LA Guns, who we haven't really wanted around in a little while, they're playing up at Park City Live, so you can get your old 80s hair metal on, too.
That's a good cross section of all the music in the world, basically. Thursday, October 25th is when you can catch that.
That's right.
Friday, October 26th, do you want to give us the rundown there?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those days where there's many, many things, and I want to yak about the man Don Williams first, and I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with him. He's considered the gentle giant of traditional country music, and, you know, country like anything else. There's really shitty country, obviously, and there's also really great country. Don Williams is one of these great old school guys. Tulsa Time is one of his big older hits. He's got a new album. He's been out running around. He's got one of those real deep, bassy, baritone country voices, and he's playing at the D Event Center in Ogden, so I have no doubt he'll have a pretty decent crowd up there.
Are you going there?
I might go, but there are these other great options. I mean, Khaki King is playing at the Stateroom, and if people don't know her, she is this amazing guitar player, plays lap steel guitar, some acoustic guitar. She worked with Eddie Vedder on the soundtrack to Into the Wild. It was actually, you know, nominated for an Oscar. She's done some really amazing stuff, toured with the Foo Fighters, you know, playing like this acoustic guitar, so she is a mean player. And the same night, the Wigs are playing at Urban Lounge, and they're in Athens, Georgia, kind of garage rock band. They've toured with the Black Keys a bit. Athens, Georgia is like the home to a bunch of my favorite old bands, like the REMs of the world, the B-52s, the Flat Duo Jets. So these guys are a three-piece in that garage rock kind of tradition, and they're at Urban, so it's going to be one of those nights you got to bounce around, man.
Is there anything else going on there? Maybe the Copper Palette Press that night?
Do you want the Copper Palette Press. It's Punk Rock Halloween. You can go see a few bands putting on their best. I've got the info here, too. Although I'm going to butcher some of these. Handy Capitalist is playing as the Gun Club. Problem Daughter is playing as the Dead Kennedys. Jaws are playing as Weezer. So you're going to have these bands, I'm assuming, dress up as the bands, but they're definitely going to be playing up, and they're in that alley behind the Estee downtown near the Copper Palette Press entry, so
that's
an awesome night. So yeah, yet another place you got to stop.
Oh man, I wish there were four of me so I could see them all.
Always, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in this town as much as a lot of other places, but when it does, you start to feel like, wait, there's five awesome things in one night in Salt Lake. That's great.
We're getting bigger.
We're getting bigger.
Expanding.
Yeah, you know it.
And that kind of starts off the weekend on Friday with a bang, and it continues into Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday, kind of my one of the real fun live bands. It comes through on one of those real steady diets. I don't know if you've seen them. Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. Have you ever checked these guys? They've come through on the Warped Tour. They've done like the free shows up at Snowbird in the summer. They've played, I think, the Stateroom. They played Burt's. Lead singer is this gigantic ball of a man from Redneck, Indiana. He has one of the most beautiful beards anyone will ever see. He curls it like with a curling iron. It is a beautiful thing. His wife is a washboard player who has created gloves with little picks within her gloves and plays one of the meanest washboard sounds. He plays a traditional old national guitar, real kind of old time, fun, good time, punk meets traditional music. Always a great time, real working class, bluesy stuff.
Now, you mentioned he's from Redneck. Where is that exactly?
It's somewhere in Nashville, Indiana. So it's not Nashville, Tennessee. It's wherever Nashville, Indiana. I'm just assuming the Redneck part. I don't know Indiana well, but I've driven through.
I thought there was a town named Redneck.
It's pretty small. There might be, actually. There's a town called Christmas, Indiana, I think. Something like that.
They've got everything in Indiana.
They do, yeah. It's surprisingly large.
And there's something else going on at Kilby. It looks like Dark, Dark, Dark is going to be there.
Dark, Dark, you know, this is another one of those nights. There's a few. Dark, Dark, Dark is headlining at Kilby. Iceburn, this is their Salt Lake show that night at Urban, too. So you kind of got to juggle your way through a little gothy rock at Kilby and maybe the Iceburn bringing that old school sound back. A reunion that I don't think they played in Salt Lake maybe since the Slug birthday party a few years ago. Is that right?
It's true, yeah.
I know we had a feature on them here on the podcast pretty recently, so that's obviously going to be a huge show up at Urban. It's pretty good stuff. The Depot has Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, a band that's been through a few times, kind of little jammy, little, you know, Vermont-based sort of jammy traditional rock and roll. Not bad, though. You know, not a bad band at all.
There's so much stuff going on this week, and it continues into Monday as well, in case you didn't get enough fun over the weekend.
That's right, and just to kind of bring it all full circle with a little more of that indie folk sound, Seawolf, band led by Alex Brown Church, they're from L.A. He actually went to film school in New York, so they have a real visual sensibility about him. First got started working with producer Phil Leck, who's a Seattle guy that people might know, who's worked with Band of Horses and The Shins and Fleet Foxes. Seawolf has a new album called Old World Romance, and another band, they bust out some cellos with the sound, got the traditional rock instruments. Should be a great time. That's at Urban Lounge on that Monday, so good way to get the week started.
Mm-hmm. Seawolf is really good. I had their first album, and it's awesome. I don't know how the next one
Leaps
is.
In the River, maybe? Yeah, the new one is pretty good, too. Yeah, I like it. I think they're definitely a guy. I mean, it's basically a guy writing all the great stuff and a solid band behind him. He'll be interesting to see develop over the years.
I think that's pretty much it, about 50 awesome events going on in a four-day period.
And a gazillion more, of course, at the Slug Mag website. People got to check that out and click on the daily calendar. That thing is chock full of good shit.
And we've got our iPhone app and, of course, the daily calendar on the front of the website, as you mentioned. It's really great. You can also email dailycalendar@slugmag.com if you have events you'd like to add. And thanks, Dan, by the way, for taking over. I'm really glad I can leave the ship in such competent hands.
You have humongo shoes to fill, my friend, and there's no way to be able to kind of really follow with any sort of style and class like yourself. But, you know, it'll be fine. I'll try to fake it till I make it.
Well, thanks, Dan. That's what I did. All right. Doing it. So thanks a lot, man.
Hey, really good luck to you. Have a great time.
Thanks. Thanks. You too. Danger Hailstorm is a four-piece rock group from Salt Lake City, one of my favorites, actually. The band formed in 2007, comprised of Salt Lake City rock veterans like Terrence D.H., Van Christensen, B.J. Parker, and Zachary Mason. They released their debut album, One, in June of 2008, followed by the follow-up, Two, in June of 2010. Over the past few years, the band has been releasing singles and EPs, their most recent being a two-track EP released on October 16th. From that EP, here's You Got It. That was You Got It from Danger Hailstorm. To download the EP where you can find that song and other albums from the group, check out their Bandcamp page at dangerhailstorm.bandcamp.com. And for more information on the group, visit them at facebook.com/dangerhailstorm. POS is a hip-hop performer based out of Minneapolis. He broke into the business in 2001 with the short-lived group Senospecies, and then formed Doomtree, along with Cecil Otter, Dessa, and Sims. Aside from being a founding member of Doomtree, he's a member of Gangs, Marijuana Death Squads, and Building Better Bombs. He launched his solo career back in 2004 with the release of his debut album, Ipecac Neat. His fourth solo album, We Don't Even Live Here, comes out this week on October 23rd. Here's contributing editor Ricky Vigil speaking with POS.
So with the new album, the production is quite a bit different. There's a lot of synth stuff, and I know you brought in people like Boys Noize and Housemeister. I was just wondering, was this a conscious decision to kind of step away from the style that you had kind of set up over the past two albums?
Yeah, definitely, actually. I wanted to rap. I wanted to showcase rap, and most of my other records, I'm rapping, absolutely, but I'm showcasing noise, and Never Better, especially, was made to be the most repellent rap music I could make at the time. Like, I wanted people to have to, like, get in there and do it, you know? This record, I feel like it's a lot more challenging as far as subject matter goes, so I wanted to open up the music aspect of it to more just getting into it. I want people to be able to fucking get down, you know, like, go for it.
Yeah, and that was actually, I wanted to ask you about that, that it is, like, the subject matter seems darker, but it is more like just, it feels kind of more like party-ish, too, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, what did you mean when you said that this is a bit more challenging in terms of the subject matter?
The record's kind of like an anarchist dance party, you know? It's like, it's tricky to get people to pay attention to what's going on in the world without having them, people don't like thinking about it, apparently. For me, being somebody that can't help but think about it, but want to make music that isn't just me beating people in the head with how upset I am with, like, the economy or something like that. You know, like, I want to make a music that people can just throw on and enjoy however they want.
So with that, like, what are some of the issues that, like, you specifically were trying to address with this album?
Wage slavery, liberation through some destruction, pulling yourself away from laws and rules if they really aren't applying to you. I don't know, man. I feel like this is heady territory, I suppose. But I get really incredibly frustrated when I think about how money works.
Yeah.
And how easily corrupted everything is by money. And just at the bare basic roots of it, so many people's happiness hinges on how much money they have or how little money they have. So just kind of attacking that whole structure, you know, because it really feels stupid to talk about politics, and it really feels stupid to talk about people's little individual rights that everybody wants, when in real life everybody's just kind of a wage slave bashing away at something.
Yeah.
I feel like the idea of getting a job, working your way from the bottom to the top, hasn't been like something that people can actually achieve since like the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, it's a joke, it's a trap. What are you going to do? That's the world that we live in.
Yeah.
We don't even live here. We live outside of that. That's what I'm trying to say with that.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was really cool. I'm a big, like, record nerd. I love, like, pre-orders of albums and stuff like that. I thought it was cool. I saw that you were offering a Crime Think book and poster as part of, like, the pre-order package for the new album. I was just kind of wondering the decision behind that.
The last two books that they put out, Expect Resistance and Work, were very inspirational in the writing of this record as far as looking at examples of people's attempts to escape, you know, and find happiness through doing your own thing. And Work, the reason why I wanted to package it with Work is because I am talking so much about, in kind of like a more subtle way than just saying, hey, our economy's fuck that, this is what we do. I'm more trying to explain how it works so people can find for themselves how they're being exploited and act on that however they want, as opposed to telling people what it is, because I don't know better than anybody else.
Yeah.
I'm not better than anybody else. I believe what I believe, and I think that if other people knew, they would believe it too. Seizing the weather, the whole storm, hugging on her prince, his hands to skin warm. Quick out the door, no note, no forlorn, cause all they heard was Papa, don't hit me no more. But they couldn't seem to keep the swelling down. How they regretting ever letting out this third child born. But things are getting better now. Yeah, cozy sweater now, with the thumbs through the holes and the sleeves worn down, and a boy similar.
One thing that is really cool about the new album, and I didn't even realize it like the first time I listened, is that you have Bon Iver, you have Justin Vernon on the album. I'm just wondering how that came to be.
We made a record together with our friend Ryan Olson, who works with me and a lot of other bands in Minneapolis, and he made a record called Gangs, and it's just kind of like, it's like an indie rock, kind of slow R&B, the whole record's at 69 beats per minute, real slow jammy. But during the process of making that record and rehearsing for the release shows and stuff like that, I got to be pretty good friends with Justin, and we've remained friends ever since.
And you were talking a little bit earlier about how you were trying to get a little bit further away from kind of the punk, the kind of noise stuff that is kind of typical of your sound. But for me, that's kind of what drew me to your music in the first place. I've always just been kind of curious. I think that punk rock and hip-hop are, you know, kind of like cousins.
The same thing.
Yeah.
The same thing.
Yeah.
The only difference, aside from the sound, is where typically you go when you get into, like, commercial hip-hop seems to be about looking really cool and being really popular, whereas punk rock is about looking cool in a really dirty way and not being so pop, just being just popular enough, you know? I think that's the big major difference. As far as this record being less noisy, I don't think that it's less noisy. I think yeah. it's still pretty damn noisy. I just think that it's not guitar noisy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a heavy record, heavy rhythmically, heavy synths. I don't think that it's too much of a departure. I don't think it's too much of a departure sound-wise for my fans not to be able to see what I was trying to do and hopefully get behind it, because the subject matter and what I'm rapping about is probably more punk than it's ever been.
And it is, like, the production is really cool. Like, I thought it was kind of surprising the first time I heard it, but, like, it just sounds cool, especially, like, I really like Get Down and all of it. It just sounds dirty, but
yeah.
cool. But kind of to go back to, like, I always loved when you brought in, like, guest musicians like Jason from Kid Dynamite and Greg from the Bouncing Souls. And I was just wondering if there's anyone you hadn't collaborated with that you would like to work with.
Yeah, there's lots of people. I don't want to get into them all because
yeah, definitely.
It's a whole different conversation. I reached out to Mos Def for this record. We got a meeting together, but we couldn't get anything done in time. I reached out to Brody from The Distillers.
Oh, rad.
Actually, to sing on Piano Hits, the last song. The tracks that are in there are just the demo tracks that I yet put in,
mm-hmm.
of course. But I had originally intended to send that to her and see if she could do it. And she didn't actually hear the song until after it went to mix.
Oh, bummer.
But she was down. So maybe we'll get to do that sometime in the future.
Yeah, cool. One thing that I kind of just thought about, something that I kind of think about, buying records is, like, expensive. It kind of goes against, like, the whole punk rock mentality and that kind of stuff. And I was just wondering, like, what is your, like, thoughts on music ownership, the money aspect of buying and owning music?
Well, I mean, just like anything, you know? Like, I don't love capitalism.
Yeah.
I just don't. But it is, that's where we live. We're tied to it. If I didn't have to pay rent, I would not charge for my music. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah.
But I do have to pay rent. I have bills and all the stuff that everybody else has. So that's where I sit. I appreciate when fans buy my records. I also appreciate when fans download my records and then come to the show and then love the show and buy some merch. Because that to me is what it is nowadays, is you can't expect people to buy the record unless they are somebody who is interested in having a physical anything. And a lot of people are just not interested in having physical anything, so I can't be mad at that. That said, if you are not going to pay for it, but you enjoy it, you need to come to the show and support. We just need some place to sleep. We need the basics, baby, we are going to be.
So with the CD, I saw that you have, like, kind of a zine included in the packaging. I was just curious about what that's all about.
The packaging is a zine.
Oh, rad.
It's not, yeah. I didn't want to just have a jewel case. I never just want to have a jewel
yeah.
case for a digipack. I always want it to be cool. And this one, like I said, just having the Crime Think book and thinking about kind of underground culture and going back to what that looks like, I just really wanted to have a zine.
Yeah, so, cool. Is it, like, the stuff that you're kind of rapping about? All that kind of explored
yep.
in the zine?
It's got the full lyrics. It's got a free download to like a shortened version of the workbook from Crime Think.
Oh, rad.
It kind of tells the story of the last 3 years of my life in photograph form, in kind of like Hamburger Eyes style. Not really Hamburger Eyes style, but like just kind of like in like a photo. Sets of photos. Some of it's collage style. Some of it's artistically interpreted. And some of it is just straight up, like, in this order, these things happened, you know?
Yeah.
There's a picture of a childbirth in there.
Oh, awesome.
it's pretty gory.
You seem to have a pretty strong connection to Salt Lake. I know you've got a big following here, and you play here pretty often, and, like, sometimes you play two shows in a day. I was just wondering kind of what your relationship is with Salt Lake.
I just like it.
Yeah.
Always been really good shows. Always been real dedicated fans, and, good people. Like, you know, I'll play at Kilby Court and I'll get to sit down with people around the fireplace for like an hour after the show just hanging out.
Yeah.
You know, I like any city that has people that don't bug the shit out of me. Like, most places I go, I'm not going to get bothered by people. Especially in Salt Lake, there's just a vibe that maybe you know, people think that it's only Mormons, so they don't go there.
Yeah, definitely. You
know, so people that go there and learn that it's not only Mormons, but it's actually like a lot of really open-minded, really music-friendly, cool culture. You know, I always look forward to going there.
POS kicks off a short U.S. tour on October 26th from his hometown of Minneapolis. For more info on him, the album, and the tour, check him out online at doomtree.net/P-O-S. Thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. What metal songs or albums do you like to rock out to during this time of year, during All Hallows Eve? We've got another metal roundtable episode coming up just in time for Halloween, and we want to hear your thoughts on scary and haunting metal, if you have any that come to mind. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message at 858-233-9324. We may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and JP. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design is by T-Done, and our technical design is by Kate Colgan. On next week's episode, the aforementioned All Hallows Eve metal episode with Dan Nalen at the reins.